Morning. Hey, so nice to meet you. If I haven't had the chance to meet you yet, my name is Chris. I am one of the pastors here. Hey, today we're going to be in the passage that Mary Cecil just so beautifully read for us. In 2011, I got my first iPhone. I grew up in the age of the lesser phones, if you remember the lesser phones, as in like flip Nokias and Blackberries and the Motorola Razr. Do you remember the Motorola Razr? That thing was the be-all and end-all. You were the coolest if you had the Razr. When I first got the iPhone, I wanted to experience all the iPhone had to happen, that it had to offer. So I had the iPhone 4S. You remember? If you do remember, that was the first one that had Siri. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have a personal assistant that exists just for me. It was great. So I used that thing to the fullest of its abilities. I was always on it. I was like glued to my phone before that was a thing. I became obsessed with it. I used it nonstop. Would never let the battery go dead. And the battery life was terrible, if you remember, on the iPhone 4S. So I had to carry like a charger with me everywhere I went and charge it up every hour and all the stuff. One day, it just got really, really, really glitchy and started lagging. Like, I would start to text a little bit, and as I would start to text, it would, like, pause, and then it would just, like, after a minute or two, it would all come, like, a paragraph would come all at once. You remember the days of glitchy iPhones? And it got really bad to where I couldn't even use it anymore, and I was like, I don't know what's wrong with this thing. This thing is a piece of junk. And so I took it to the most Apple guru guy that I knew, and he happened to be the youth pastor that I was interning under at the time. And Gerald was his name. And Gerald said, when was the last time that you turned it off? And I was like, turned it off? What does that even mean? Like, maybe in the shipping box on its way to me. It was the last time that it was not on. And so he held the home button and the power button for like 10 seconds. And it turned off. And in about 5 minutes, it turned back on, and it was working exactly how it was meant to be. It just needed to be reset. It just gotten glitchy from days and weeks of constant usage. The five-minute break that the iPhone took was from the constant demand of it was all it needed to reset, be back to being the best phone in existence. Do you ever feel glitchy and kind of laggy and like you just can't catch up? It seems that with each day and each passing season, that life and the pace of life and the demands of the world around us are more and more and more, that it's a faster pace always. Kind of the be-all and end-all of life right now is you got to go quicker. The 40-hour work weeks are considered light for most of us. Vacations are a luxury for something that only executives in business get the benefit of. But by then, the executives are too busy and too important to take a week off of work. So even if they do get away, or even if we do get the chance to steal away, the vacations are stolen from us because of phone calls and emails that we got to catch up on. Busyness and the pace of life is the demand of our day, right? It's the underarching theme in every ad, every TV spot that you see. It's the underarching theme of your social media. You got to work harder. It is the secret sauce of your success in your future career. If you grind now, you will benefit. You will reap the benefits later. If you want to succeed later in life, you got to put in hustle right now. You got to do more, go harder, be faster, speed, quick. And everyone is buying it because everyone's busy. College students, you're busy. We haven't even started the semester yet, and you're like, I don't even have time. I don't know. Parents of preschoolers are busy. Part-time nannies are busy. Grandparents are busy. Empty nesters in retirement are busy. Vacations are busy. How often do you hear the phrase, I need a vacation from the vacation that I just took, right? For many of us, our lives look like this. Hurried, rushed, busy, moving, and we're frustrated until we burn out and we give up on whatever extracurricular activity we had going or whatever New Year's resolution, like I'm finally going to read the Bible, that gets snuffed out by the pace of our lives, right? We're hurried out the door, always moving from one thing to the next. We're busier than we have ever been. And we're frustrated because we're not progressing like we think we should be. Like what we're being bought or what we're being sold is, if you hustle this much, then you'll progress. Then you'll get there in life. And we're frustrated because we're meeting the pace of the demand, but we're not getting the output, right? We feel, most of us might even feel like an octopus on roller skates. Like we're moving everywhere and we're not really going anywhere, right? We're busier than we've ever been. A lot of movement, but not really going anywhere. And the busyness and the demand of our lives, it leads, honestly, to the state of our souls feeling drained and empty, and we feel like broken. So here's our solution. This is our solution. Time. If only I had more time. Let me ask you this. What if we could fix the brokenness and the emptiness that we feel with more time? So what if I gave you an extra magic 10 hours of the day? So not 24 hours anymore, 34 hours. Now think about it. You unlock the secret extra 10, we can finally have the prayer life that we want. Now we can read the Bible in a year because we have an extra 10 hours a day. We can finally catch up on the sleep that we've been depriving ourselves of. We can catch up on the project. We can have that family over that we've been trying to have over for 6 months at this point in time. We got it. We got the extra 10 hours a day. Here's what I'm going to suggest. This extra 10 hours that we think is like, man, if I just had a little bit more time, I could get everything I need to get done. Here's my suggestion. My bet is that our lives would look exactly like they do right now. We would be just as busy. We'd be maybe even a little bit more tired. Because here's how we're going to fill up those 10 hours. Exactly how we fill up these 24 hours that we have. Here's my bet. And this is honestly a thought. The issue with our spiritual lives isn't a lack of time. It's a lack of priority. It's a lack of priority. It's a lack of priority. Jesus has an answer to this. And the biblical precedent for this is, throughout the Bible, there was this moment called Sabbath. And it's a momentary stop. You remember in Genesis 1 when God created the earth in 7 days, he actually didn't create it in 7 days, he created it in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested, he stopped. And so this was this moment of Sabbath. It's a moment for you to stop your work. And the Bible gives Sabbath as an example, a practice, a command to the people of God to remind them that they're not the sovereign of the universe, that we're not the kings of anything. We're not the rulers. We are not God. God is God. So every day, their day would end at sundown. So think about this. They used to measure their days by the end of the day would be sundown. And the beginning of the day would be night. So they would start every day with 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep. We think, man, I got to get an early start to the day. Come on, we got to get up early. We got to go for it. Get a lot done at the first start of the day. No. They stopped. The first part of their day was 8 hours of rest. It was Sabbath. Every week, they would take a day, and they would worship, and they would rest. Every season, they would mark the changing of seasons with these festivals, with feasts. That weren't like just like a thing that we had to do. They were like essentially parties. They were breaks in the season that would remind them that God is holy, God is in control, and I can stop to celebrate Him because Him being in control is worth celebrating. every 6 years of planting and farming, there are a lot of farming culture in the Bible. Every 6 years of planting and farming a plot of ground, they would take a break. It was called the Year of Jubilee, and they would not, work this plot of ground. They would let this plot of ground rest. And what they found is when they let it rest, the next season it would produce more. It would be more vibrant than just consistently letting it go on year on year and year and working. It's meant to convey that I'm not the ruler. Sabbath is meant to convey that none of us are the rulers of our lives. We have to rest 8 hours a day. We're going to take over the world after I sleep for so long. In March of this past year, my wife and I got a great opportunity. Our church that we were serving at gave us a sabbatical, which was a month-long time away from ministry. And I took that time, and I was away from my phone for a majority of it. I didn't have my phone at all for a majority of it. And when I turned my phone back on in April, so it was the month of March, and so in April I turned my phone back on, and I checked my emails and I checked my text messages, and you know what I found? The world was just fine without Chris Prather. Nobody even really noticed that I was gone. The ministry that I was running didn't implode. The company didn't burn to the ground. Everything was fine just without me. Sabbath serves as a reminder that I tend to make myself out to be the savior of my world, the master of my schedule. And the momentary removal of me puts me and my world back in its correct order. So this is the biblical precedent. Sabbath, a moment to remind myself that I'm not king, but God is. But just like good, overly religious people, the Pharisees put their spin on this good gift that God had given his people. And they created it. They created a Pharisee Sabbath to be a rigid law that you had to, if you want to make God happy, you have to do this. You have to stop what you're doing. And it turned it into a rigid structure that burdened people and drained the life out of God's people more than gave them life, which is what God intended. Pharisees became gatekeepers that created these extra steps to make sure that you weren't going to break one of the commandments, which was to honor the Sabbath and keep it holy. And so they would say, you can only walk this number of steps, because if you walk a lot, that means you're working. You can't work out on the Sabbath. You can't go and pick grain on the Sabbath. So pick what you need for Sunday. Make sure you pick it on Saturday, because you don't need to pick any grain on Sunday, because that's working on the Sabbath. If you had a piece of cattle that fell into a ravine or fell into a well, you couldn't save it. You couldn't help it. You couldn't get it out, because that's work on the Sabbath. And so they created all of these man-made extra rules on top of the Sabbath. And they became a rigid structure that began to suck the life out of people and drain the life out of people, as opposed to do what God intended, which was to encourage his people and to help you nourish life. That's not Jesus' Sabbath, though. This is the Pharisee's Sabbath. Jesus' Sabbath, I want to give you three things about Jesus' Sabbath. We're going to find them in some passages around Mark 2, what we just read. So Sabbath was a day of filling. It was a day of filling. If you'll notice in this passage, so Jesus and his boys are walking down a field and they get hungry. And so they are right by some grain. They're right by a field of grain. And so they go and pick some heads of grain and they eat it. And man, it was good. The emptiness that their stomach had felt was satisfied. It rubbed the Pharisees the wrong way. Don't pick grain on the Sabbath. Remember, that's one of the rules that they came up with. Don't pick grain on the Sabbath. That's working. And Jesus says, no. That's a religious law that you made up on the Sabbath. In this first story, Jesus makes sure that his followers, that they're fed and satisfied, that they are filled up on the Sabbath. Jesus does this often. He often retreats. Often. he often gets away from the pace and the demand of life. Now, Jesus understands busyness. Jesus understands a busy schedule. There were times where Jesus worked all through the night healing people and being close to people. But as often as that happened, he was stealing away from the pace and the demand so that he could fill himself up in intimacy with the Father. And Sabbath is what Sabbath has meant for you and I. A day of filling ourselves up so that we can pour ourselves out into our schedules. Our cycle of life is exhausting. It looks a little bit like this. It looks like busyness, and we go to exhaustion, and then we say, you know what? I'm going to push through. Let's go. And I'm just going to go a little bit harder. I'm going to push a little bit further until that leads to some type of burnout and breakdown, and it's a forced stop. But we work ourselves to the point of being sick, right? We have an exhausted rhythm of life. Jesus had what's called an eremos rhythm of life. Eremos is this word in the Greek, and you'll understand it when you see it, because Jesus starts his ministry in the eremos. He goes out into the wilderness, and that's what eremos means. Eremos is kind of a catch-all phrase for the lonely place, the wilderness, the desert, the secret place, the hidden place. You'll see it all over the place in Scripture. Whenever it says that Jesus was retreating away, even in the earlier, one chapter earlier, in Mark chapter 1, it says Jesus often withdrew to lonely places. He withdrew to the eremos. And what he's doing there is he's filling himself up so that he can go into the pace and the demand of his workplace and his friends and his classes and where he's walking down streets and people are coming, and he pours himself out. And then he pours himself out, and what's he do? I'm going to steal away in intimacy with Jesus, and I'm going to fill myself up on Sabbath. And then he goes and pours himself out. He has an eremos rhythm. We have an exhausting rhythm. Jesus feeding his followers with grain on the Sabbath teaches us that the endless pouring of ourselves out isn't going to get us where we want to go. And it's only going to help us feel like the gears are grinding in our soul. He will fill us up as we pour ourselves out on Sabbath. So we stop, and then we pour out. So Sabbath is a day of filling. It's also a day of healing. If you'll notice in the next passage, we didn't read it, but let's read it together now. So literally just keep on going. This is a collection of teachings about the Sabbath. And so chapter 3, verse 1, Jesus went into the synagogue again and noticed a man with a deformed hand. Since it was the Sabbath, Jesus' enemies, the Pharisees, were watching him closely. What's he going to do? Because if he healed the man's hand, they planned to accuse him of working on the Sabbath. And Jesus said to the man with the deformed hand, he said, hey, come stand in front of everybody. Like, he's not doing it secretly. He's not doing it like over in the corner. He's like, hey, why don't you come up here? Let's do this in front of everybody. Come stand in front of everyone. And then he turned to his critics and said, does the law permit good deeds on the Sabbath, or is it a day for doing evil? Is this a day to save life or destroy it? They didn't want to answer, because how are you going to answer that? He looked around at them angrily and was deeply saddened by their hardened hearts. He said to the man, hold out your hand. So the man holds out his hand, and at once it's restored. So there are seven miracles that Jesus does on the Sabbath. Like, throughout the four Gospels, Jesus performs seven miracles on the Sabbath. Now, Jesus does a lot of miracles, a lot of days of the week, all the days of the week. His ministry was a miraculous ministry. He would multiply bread, feed 5,000 people. There's another time where he feeds 4,000 people. He's healing people left and right, and he's doing that all throughout the week. He's doing it on all days of the week. And there are seven times that he does a miracle on the Sabbath. And if you were to classify that as a type, like what type of miracle is he doing on the Sabbath? The only type of miracle that he does on the Sabbath is heal. It's a day of healing. It's a day where we can come with the brokenness and with the hurt that we feel and the pain that we sustain when we're pouring ourselves out. Sabbath is meant to be a day where we stop and we let Jesus, who's known as the great physician, we let him address the wound. The brokenness, the hurting we feel inside of us is only meant to be healed by Sabbath. So what was your New Year's resolution? Mine and Shelby's were that we were going to be pretty more, it's a very common, we're going to be a little bit more passionate about working out. So we're on this workout program. A couple weeks ago, as we started it, I was like working out my arms one day, and the next day I woke up and I had tendonitis in both of my elbows. And so what that means is my tendons inflamed and they constricted. So I woke up with hands in my face, and I was like, what is happening? And so my elbows had constricted to where I was like here, and I couldn't straighten them out. It was terrible. It hurt. And so I was like, I don't know what this is. I need to figure this out. I'd never had tendonitis in my elbows. Had it in my knees growing up, but never had it in my elbows. I didn't even know you could have it in your elbows. And what I found was the only solution to a pain and to a hurt like this is rest. That if I try to overexert it, if I were to continue to try to work out, it would only make the pain. It would only exponentially multiply the pain. It would keep the wound from healing if I kept trying to. And you and I, in our lives, we carry hurts, we carry pains that Jesus wants to address and heal in the rest of Sabbath. But oftentimes we say, hold on, I got some stuff to do. Sabbath is a day of filling. Sabbath is a day of healing. And Sabbath is a day of withness. Not witness, withness. Because here's the reality. There is no secret sauce to a weekly break. It's not like your body is like, okay, good, I'm taking a break. It's going to be good. I'm just going to binge out on Netflix today, and then I'm going to feel great tomorrow. There's no ritual that the act of you not working for a week or stealing away for an hour a day is going to magically just heal you and what's going on and fill you up. Healing and filling only happen when we turn our gaze intentionally to closeness with Jesus. And that is what Sabbath is for. Just before the passage, in verses like 18 and 19, the Pharisees come and they're trying to get Jesus again, and they say, hey, why don't your disciples fast like everybody else does? Fasting is a thing that you say in the Old Testament, right? If you say you're God, why don't you fast like John's disciples? And he says, do wedding guests fast when the bridegroom's with them? Of course not. They don't fast while the groom's with them, but someday the groom will be taken away and then they fast. Like, now is the time of feasting. The emphasis of what he's trying to say here is, hey, come and be with me. Sabbath is the day. Sabbath is ultimately a devoted time for us to steal away from the pace and the demand of our lives, where we're consistently poured out and we're pulled at from the world, and it's meant for us to do this. It is meant for us to refix our gaze on Jesus, because healing and filling only happen through him. Through him. It's not like I'm going to be filled by just binge watching Netflix and doom scrolling on Instagram all day. That's a rest that might be a little bit more destructive to my soul. But for me to be able to put my attention and my focus on him, that is where healing happens. That's where the deep soul stuff that I carry with me, that's where it can be healed. That's where the emptiness that I feel, that's where that can be filled up. We're in the series where we talk about kind of spiritual disciplines and devotions, like things that we can do to help us progress in life, in our spiritual lives, right? Last week we talked about the importance of reading the Word consistently. This week we're talking about this rhythm of Sabbath. And And the New Testament has this word for these disciplines, and the word is devotion. And I love the breakdown of this word, devotion. The New Testament uses the word devotion to talk about these disciplines, these spiritual practices, things that we would devote ourselves to, that we would be devoted to doing these things, right? They can sometimes feel a little bit legalistic and law, or like law-giving, right? Just like the Pharisees had turned the practice of Sabbath into a rule of law. But Jesus uses the word devotion, and he tells them, hey, look, you're missing the point. The reason for these disciplines is so that you can be devoted to me. Here's the word. Anytime you see the word devoted in Greek, you can parse it out into two things. And the word means good beside. Good beside. I love it. It's a beautiful wordplay. In 2013, Shelby and I went, I think it's 2013, days run together, years run together. 2013, Shelby and I went on our first date, and it was real awkward. I didn't know whether to hold her hand or just to, like, sit here idly. I was literally thinking, what do I do with my hands right now? You know, like, I didn't know, like, the 10-second pauses in between sentences, you felt like you had to, like, just keep going and just keep talking because any second of pause felt like an eternity, you know? It was awkward. And a decade later, last Tuesday night, we went out on a date and we didn't talk the whole ride home. You might say, well, that's because you have three kids that yell in your face all the time. You just need some silence. And I say, I get it. I agree. But also, we didn't talk the whole time in the car ride. And we got out and it just felt natural. Why? Because over time, in the prioritization of each other and a lot of date nights, we've become good at being beside each other. And the goal of your spiritual disciplines and the goal of you practicing a Sabbath and getting into the Word, next week we're going to talk about the goal of your prayer life, is for you to get good at being beside someone that you're going to spend eternity with. How terrible would it be if we got into eternity with a stranger? Let's get good at being beside him now. This is the goal of Sabbath, that we can put our eyes and we can prioritize intimacy with him. Intimacy with him. The rhythm of Sabbath, it's a time to stop, correctly position ourselves as people who need a Lord over everything. Like, I don't need to be the Lord over everything. I need somebody to be the master of my schedule. That's not me. I'll make a mess of it. Sabbath is an invitation for you to find soul satisfaction, for your soul to be filled up, for the grind to go away. It's a time for you to be able to address the wounds that we all carry. Today, Jesus is inviting us to find it in him, fulfillment, satisfaction, nowhere else but in him. Today, Jesus is inviting us for him to heal the brokenness inside of us. It's not through sacred ritual. It is through intentionally putting our attention on him. On him. It's an invitation to intimacy, to creating space to be with him. So, in this series, we want to be really practical with you. And so I just want to give you three kind of practices for you to do. And I just think about it in daily, weekly, and yearly, okay? Daily, weekly, yearly. So daily, figure out a time where you can prioritize a moment for you to steal away. Oftentimes in the morning works best for me, where I can steal away, where I can make myself available for Jesus to speak. I normally carry my Bible. And I carry open hands, quite literally. I carry open hands. I start majority of my time in the Word with open hands. And so I'm saying, hey, Jesus, I am here. Whatever you want to say to me, I'm surrendering my life all over again to you right now. Whatever you need, I'm here. Whatever you want to say to me, I'm listening. I'm reading in those times. I'm making himself available. And I'm listening with the intent to obey. That's daily. Find a day, find a time that works best for you, For some of you night owls, do it at night. That's great. Just find a time that works for you. All right, and then on a weekly, set aside a day where you Sabbath, where you rest from the pace and the demand of your life. Jesus says, this thing was made to meet your needs. Like Sabbath was created, he says in verse 27. The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people. Do you know what he said right there? You need this. You need this. So set aside a day where you Sabbath. Now, I'm a pastor, which means I work on Sundays. So my Sabbath is Friday or Saturday every week. So do life-giving things that fill up your soul. Create a sacred day where you put your attention on Jesus and you spiritually recharge your batteries. You reset. And then yearly, this one's a fun one, take a vacation. Take an extended time away from your life as you know it and as you normally spend it. Find a yearly time to remind yourself that you are not the sovereign over your life. Jesus is. Love your family on those days. Rest well on those days. Friends, you are more than what you do. Like, you're not a college student. You're not just a mom. You're not just a dad. You are a follower of Jesus. And here's what I want to say. You're probably a better mom or dad or college student or employee or boss. You're probably a better husband and wife when you are a follower of Jesus first. So let's build ourselves an intimacy with Jesus on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, and on a yearly basis. Ultimately, this is a moment of priority. It's a moment of priority. Our worship team's going to come, and in this time, I want you to reflect and think through. Is Jesus the priority of my life? Remember, the struggle and the issue with our spiritual lives is not an issue of time. It is an issue of priority. And so, am I prioritizing intimacy with God on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a yearly basis? If I'm not, no shade thrown. There's all grace and mercy from Jesus. Today is the day where he'll lead you into still waters and into green pastures. So, what does that look like? You might want to even just like schedule out and think through your next week and say, how am I going to spend time? When's the best time of day that I can? What day next week am I going to take a Sabbath? So think about that. And then let's give him our lives. And just in the way that I start my daily basis, by maybe just even by open hands during worship, saying, hey, I'm available for whatever you want to do in me. I've got some stuff in here that I might need to hand over to you, and but whatever you want to put in, whatever you want to take out, I've got an open hand. And Jesus, that's what we tell you now. That's what we as a group, we tell you that now, that whatever you need from us, we're available, we're open. God, thank you that the teaching of Sabbath teaches us that we just need you. We need you. Help us to put our mind, our attention, refix our gaze on you. We're sorry that our gaze is kind of prone to wander. And we turn to look at the pace of our life and what's demanded of us, and we forget who we are and who you've created us to be. But God, today, we refix our gaze on you.